Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
First things first, I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. As always, this is Nick Wright. We've got a full jam show for you today. We got some controversy surrounding Carson Wentz and the Eagles, Chris Carter.
Yeah.
The Saints, they're still complaining about the no call on Sunday. We're going to kick things off, though, with
Man,
the Patriots.
Did you guys have a good night last night?
Okay. Great. I don't have time for
the
night.
I mean, what'd you guys have for dinner?
No time.
Jen ain't got time for you. We're talking sports.
I don't have time for this. All I want to talk about is sports.
I had a Brady shake.
All right. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are preparing for their 9th Super Bowl as a tandem. After Sunday's win, cameras caught a special moment as the two were seen embracing, saying they love each other. Same way Nick and CeCe do to start every morning here. As you'd guess, it was a hot topic yesterday. Here's Tom Brady on his relationship with his longtime coach.
You know, we've always gotten along great. We've worked together for 19 years. So, you know, we've been in the same, had the same goals in mind for 19 years. And, you know, he's been just a great, great mentor in my life, a great coach. He's taught me, you know, more than, you know, anyone ever could about the game of football. You know, I've always just loved playing here and playing for him. He's the greatest coach of all time. And we just had some incredible moments together.
So, you see, we have heard and talked a lot about the relationship between these two, not just this year, but in years past, the discord between them. Has it been overblown? Because here they are again. And obviously, as you just heard from Tom Brady, things are, you know, great.
Well, let's just look over the last 15, 18 years in New England. Any story out of New England? Because of the success that they've had, all of them have been overblown. Like, regardless of what you talk about, even if you go back to Spygate, the amount of coverage, Tom Brady's suspension, all those things, because they're the world champs. They're the most intriguing story that we've had in sports in the last 20 years, and they've dominated the landscape as far as they have created a lot of haters along the way being successful. So, for me, this is more about this was inevitable. This was going to happen. And the reason why is because Bill Belichick and ultimately what he believes in as far as controlling his roster, as far as getting rid of players before they're out of their prime, not signing older players to long-term contracts, and him determining when a player, when their shelf life was going to be ended, him and Tom Brady, based on what Tom, this how Tom has tried to restructure his whole eating and restructure his whole career based on eating, they were on a crash course. Because Tom Brady has been saying for a long time, I want to play till I'm 45. Well, Bill Belichick, ultimately, that was going to meet, regardless, if we weren't talking about anything else, just forget about relationships, how tough they are, being in a pressure environment that they have been in, all the things. Yes, that's a normal amount of stress on any relationship. But you know, Brumley brought it to my attention. Man, let's look at some of the greatest relationships ever. They break up.
Right. There's. Well, go ahead. If you.
No. Go ahead. That's it.
No. I mean, that's what the bands. You know what I mean? Be it the television shows. Like there are a lot of long-running television shows, but like the person sitting with Regis changes or there. And so there's. It's hard for things to last. Marriages. And I don't think it was overblown. I think what happened last year and what was reported last year was real. There was a power struggle, and Brady won it. And you know what? I think they're both better off for it. I think Belichick was looking for the same timeline I'd been looking at in NFL history, which was no one had done what Brady did at 39. So is he going to do it at 40 and at 41? He says he wants to play till he's 45. I've got this young quarterback who I think can do it. I know at the time being would be doing it cheaper. And then the inflection point of the relationship where the, even if Brady already had seized some of the power, was the comeback in the Falcons Super Bowl. From that moment forward, Tom Brady, if he wasn't already a made man in NFL lore, he became as made of a man as you can within the only people who have real power over Belichick's life, the Krafts. And because of that, we saw what we saw last year, which was almost seemingly rushed at the trade deadline. Jimmy Garoppolo traded. I do think there was real discord, but discord doesn't mean dysfunction. And discord doesn't mean
it
that
can. It just didn't.
Absolutely right. And it all worked out.
Right.
I know they didn't win the Super Bowl last year, but that wasn't on number 12. What did he throw, 500 mm-hmm. yards? He was mm-hmm. great. And then this year, when things seem to be on the team level deteriorating from a performance standpoint, come the playoffs, they dominate the Chargers. Belichick has a brilliant game plan for the Chiefs. And then in the final moments, guess what? Brady was perfect. And so to me, that embrace at the midfield was, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but when I'm looking at it, it was a realization from both of them. Man, we don't get to 9 by ourselves. We might not get to 5 by ourselves. We might not get to 3 by ourselves, because that Chiefs game was the perfect melding of the two. Belichick took care of the beginning. Brady took care of the end. And with the two of them, they are so much greater as a combo than what they would be individually.
The reason why I believe it's overblown is because I know Mr. Kraft. I know enough about Belichick in knowing players that have played for him, played against him, know other coaches that have coached with him, know people that have played with Tom Brady. And there's not a lot of information on these relationships. So for me, a lot of this stuff is guessing. A lot of the stuff, it is gossip, because there's not a lot of information out of that relationship. So I believe a lot of the media attention, people add things to what happened. Ultimately, they had to make a decision on Jimmy Garoppolo. Right. If he was going to stay, if he was going to go. Now, Belichick might have wanted something else, but Tom Brady's ability to play at 40, that changed the game.
Changed
him playing at an MVP level at 40, regardless of what Belichick believed in, all right, it became evident Tom Brady wanted to finish his playing career with the New England Patriots. So for me, I don't think there was as much tension there as people would try to make us try to believe there was tension there, compared to there's automatically going to be tension in a work relationship, especially when you can't control your exit. And that's the way it is with Tom Brady in New England.
What people like to do so often is pull them apart. Well, does one need the other? Who's more important? Who won that game? Who's responsible more for the titles? Who's responsible more for the success? But it appears to be that them together are responsible for the success, that they wouldn't be able to survive, if you will, separate from each other. Why are we even asking that question? I mean, can you think of another relationship in sports that has, we just talked about in Green Bay
with McCarthy and Rodgers,
1 or 2 seasons of him being a little upset and they had to separate the two. I'm sure that it has gone over the years where there are times where Tom Brady's frustrated, but I can't imagine the two of them not being together and not being responsible
for
success.
Right. It's a sports unknown, and we'll never know it. Like, what would Belichick's career have been like with a different quarterback, and what Brady's career would have been like with a different coach? I do think there are paths to go down where, for both of them, it doesn't end anywhere near greatest of all time discussion. But what we know is what we know, which is together they have accomplished unprecedented, and it's not just unprecedented. It would have been seemingly, if I would have told you, Chris, or when you were retiring, would you retired the year after they won their first Super Bowl, mm-hmm. that, hey, these guys are going to go to 8 more of these things together. They're going to win 4 more, maybe 5 more. I don't think you would have believed it was possible. I don't think anyone thought that it was.
No, I would have put that in the bag of Nick Wright's hot takes.
Right. I mean, it
this is not going to happen.
It is more, when people say, when LeBron went to the Heat and he was like, not 6, not 7. That seemed outlandish, but it didn't seem impossible. When people talk about the Warriors, if they stay together, could they win 4 in a row, 5 in a row? It seems outlandish, but not impossible. What the Patriots have done seems impossible. The only reason it's believable is because we saw it happen, and it obviously and clearly doesn't happen without these two guys coming together at the exact moment they did and the way they did.
Belichick can't coach the way he wants to coach unless he has a quarterback like Tom Brady. So for me, Belichick will always be more important. His impact on the 53-man roster, how that roster is put together, how the front office is going to do, how the Crafts are going to run their football business, that's all Belichick. Josh McDaniels comes down, gives Brady 8 plays the morning of the AFC Championship, what happens to be the most important game of Tom Brady's career. That was not Tom Brady. Tom Brady just showed up. But what they have put in place to allow him to be better, to me, that's why Belichick is far more important than Tom Brady. And I believe that Tom Brady understands that more than the public. That's why I believe that the public makes too much of the relationship as if there's tension there. I believe Tom Brady understands it more than we do.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, why are players calling Carson Wentz selfish? Talk some Eagles next on First Things First.
There's something about auctions that makes shopping so much more fun. For sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your own home. Pristine Auction runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of all of their items, and everything you purchase comes from only the most trusted sources. And the best part? It's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Ricky Stenhouse Jr. photo that sold for only $6. Go check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and you only pay for the items you win. That's pristineauction.com. And when you register, be sure to select First Things First podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Let them know we sent you. Make sure you select First Things First podcast from the drop-down menu when you go to pristineauction.com.
All right, we'll get to Carson Wentz and the Eagles in just a second, but first, a couple of big plays you might have missed last night. Oh, Giannis driving to the basket and then does that to Luka Doncic.
Man, watching Giannis on a night-to-night basis is such a joy.
He's the most dangerous player in the open court. You never think he's going to finish like this, but, man, some type of way he can dunk on you.
Sixers,
all
Rockets,
different types of angles.
James Harden leading the break. Joel Embiid hustles back, throws Harden's layup off the backboard. Sixers with a big win last night.
Dominating win over Houston despite James Harden heroics. This is something Houston might have to get used to in this time with no Capella, still no Paul. Harden's great, and they get whooped.
Oh, yeah, they were going at it last night. This was a fun game to watch. Houston didn't play well, but they got under Harden's skin.
Man, Embiid's going to have a lot of enemies in this league. Oh, no.
Bulls-Cavs, Chris Dunn throws a perfect alley-oop to Zach LaVine.
I don't know about the city of Chicago, but for a national show, we have the Bulls, a sorry team, on our highlight reel on a regular basis. I don't know why. It's not as if we have some connection there.
They got some high flyers on the team. Here's the thing for the Cavs. We have now passed MLK Day, which is a big day on the NBA calendar. They are still in single-digit wins. Still Cleveland. If the NBA, if they end up with Zion.
I don't think we had the highlights on there so you can flame Cleveland.
Well, it's just what came to mind. You flame the Bulls and our production staff from one there. Oh, no.
Finally, worst you'll ever see out of Steph Curry. Going for the dunk. That's not good. Then Iggy gets him the ball back and air ball. That's not good either.
So, listen, good thing he didn't get hurt. Since he didn't get hurt, we can laugh about it. Steph and Clay have...
No, if he had gotten hurt, I would still be laughing.
Okay. All right, fine. Steph and Clay have an ongoing competition about dunks in the season. Clay's at 11. Steph is at 1. So Steph was trying to get to 2 there. He said after the game he had something special cooked up. Instead, he falls down.
Yeah, that's what happens if you buy basketball shoes at the grocery store. Those Under Armours, to me, they still have a long way to go as far as technology before they get on my feet.
All right, moving on to Carson Wentz. So, report came out yesterday calling Philly's franchise quarterback, quote, selfish and egotistical, and went on to say, quote, Carson Wentz's biggest enemy is Carson Wentz. This from anonymous players interviewed on the Eagles. Well, let's just say this made some non-anonymous players on the Eagles upset. Lane Johnson came to his quarterback's defense, tweeting, "Whoever wrote that article needs to check their sources. Hashtag fake news. Carson has been and is our leader and our quarterback. Y'all know where to find me if you have any issues. Hashtag fly Eagles fly." And Fletcher Cox chimed in, "Reading through this Carson Wentz thing, and as a leader on this team, none of that's true. Carson's a great teammate and great player, and we're all behind him 100%. He's our guy, and we'll come back and prove the world wrong. If you got a problem, feel free to at me. I will respond." All right, Nick, what do you make of all this?
All right, so I don't believe the author made this up. Just said I talked to six Eagles players, and he didn't. I do think these are people on the team, people close to the team, saying these things. Now, what should we take these things to mean? I think it also should be noted, Josina Anderson, who is as reputable a reporter as there is, a couple months ago reported some of the same frustrations with Carson Wentz before Nick Foles got his second act with the team about it being a Zach Ertz-centric offense, about him not going through the progressions as far as looking at who's open, instead looking to either run the ball on the RPOs himself or to Zach Ertz rather than just go with the flow of the offense. So we've had multiple reports now with some Eagles being frustrated. This doesn't surprise me in the least. Like, if you are a pass catcher on the Eagles, not named Zach Ertz, of course you're frustrated. Zach Ertz is a good player, but he's not good enough to be the most targeted tight end in NFL history. And it should be noted, the guy whose record he broke for catches by a tight end in NFL history, we heard some of this with Witten and Romo. If you remember that relationship where there were receivers on the Cowboys, maybe a little jealous is one way to put it about that relationship and whether or not he was favored as far as pass catching. C talks all the time. Receivers care about two things above all else, their money and their stats. And the stats help you get the money. And so do I believe that there could be players on the Eagles that, A, think the team plays better with Nick Foles? Absolutely. I think there are a lot of people, even if they can't explain it, that think the team plays better with Nick Foles. And B, are frustrated that they run one offense that they won and won a Super Bowl, another, the same offense they won, they ran at the end of the year, and seemingly a different Zach Ertz-centric offense while Carson Wentz is out there. I buy all of that. Now, the selfish, egotistical part, I've never heard that before. And so, and it seems like there are a lot of teammates publicly saying that isn't who he is. So maybe there's certain guys that don't like Carson Wentz as a guy, but that doesn't seem to be the knock on him. But the football knock, I think, is fair and real, and I believe it.
Well, from a football standpoint, you have a number of quotes in there, and I think it's important that the audience knows that when you have people like Fletcher Cox, when you have people like Lane Johnson, those are interior. Those are kind of the heart and soul. The reason why they were good last year was because their big people were better. Their offense and defensive line, even though they had the injuries. But as far as understanding football, those guys understand the least amount of football that's on the field. Lane Johnson, he doesn't know who's supposed to get the ball. When they tell him a pass protection, they tell him the pass protection and they tell him the snap count. The rest of it, he not listening to. If I go, let's go double right, scat right, 585, X dig. All he cares about is the number that tells him the protection, and that's the 585 to tell him the quarterback's going to be going five steps back. So who's supposed to get the ball on everything? He don't know. Fletcher Cox is a defensive tackle. He has no clue of what the offense is doing. Now, they've been utilizing their running backs by committee. So you know it's not one of the running backs because none of them have a big enough role to be able to say something like this. To me, I do believe that there are wide receivers on the team that have said comments that this reporter has also added his own personal opinion on it, that he could be able to write stories or things could be released like this. But if you think throughout my career there weren't other wide receivers jealous, or you weren't, there weren't other wide receivers that said, man, if I could be targeted 14 times like Chris, I would be different. My career would be different. I would be a lot better. So for me, in something like this, I've been following it long enough to think one of the wide receivers did give him some comments. And it's hard for people. It's hard to impossible. When someone shows up on the job and your performance goes up, for them not to think that that between the correlation between their performance and that person not being better, that's all they can interpret. And there's no NFL offenses that are the same when you put the backup in compared, because no one sees football the same. I don't care. If Drew Brees was the backup for New England and they had the same game plan, the ball would not come out to the same people because it's impossible for two people to see football the same way. Every coach at the end of the week, you know what he asked the starting quarterback? How comfortable are you with this? What else do you like? What do you feel? Because guys like, they feel more comfortable throwing to certain parts of the field. Yes, and there's guys that feel more comfortable throwing to certain receivers.
Yep.
Just to protect the quarterbacks a little bit from the Philly thing, and then I'm going to stop. There ain't a whole bunch of separation. So when you talk about throwing the ball to Zach Ertz, he's their best wide receiver. He gets the most separation. He wins more than the other receivers. Alshon is no separation. He's a 50-50 guy. All right. Nelson Aguilar is inconsistent his first several years in the league. Who else do you have there? So when the receivers are complaining, I would just like, be careful, because there's not a whole bunch of separation I see the wide receivers getting.
Is it a legitimate knock on a quarterback to not go through his progressions for him to feel a certain level of comfort with one specific receiver?
It's a legitimate knock if the offense is not reaching its full potential. It's a legitimate knock if you could be being more effective. And that's DeCee's point, which is when they got in real time, we usually don't get this in sports, the real time experiment, which is let's change one variable. The variable being quarterback. Oh, all of a sudden, look, the offense is wide open. The offense opens up. The other part.
I wouldn't say as far as one offense is wide open when Carson Wentz is not in there to Nick Foles.
I don't think that was the case in the 2017 season. In the 2018 season, to my eyes, the offense did seem to open up greatly in the final month of the season once Nick Foles went in there. Now, we can talk about the other things that weren't as one-to-one as far as quarterback change. Offensive line got better. Guys got healthier. More desperation. They really could wear the underdog roles, whatever it is. But I understand why guys would think that what changed was the quarterback. Now I'm getting my numbers. Now I'm getting my targets. The other part of this that I thought was interesting was that you had DeFilippo leave, you had the offensive coordinator leave, and Frank Reich leave, and all of a sudden they said, now Carson Wentz can run over the room. That he had the ability, according to this report, to, with their new offensive coordinator, grow to kind of impose his will more so than he had last year. And that could be a problem for any young quarterback, for anyone that hasn't seen as much football as Frank Reich in his 30-plus years, John DeFilippo in his 20-plus years, and whether or not that hurt their offense somewhat. The silver lining for the Eagles is, see, they've been looking for, with Wentz, a reason to say, man, people are doubting us. And now all of a sudden, if they want to be able to rally on, man, guys think you're a bad guy. Guys think that we're better with Nick Foles, who's going to be on a different team next year. Right. Maybe that can be their rallying point for next season.
I just believe in Carson Wentz. I believe he is the answer. I know each quarterback has their personality, but from everything that I have felt coming out of Philadelphia, the players I talked to, that they would really, really there's no way that they believe this story. And I can understand people thinking, old Nick Foles, a better quarterback. But there's no way that I'm going forward as Nick Foles as my quarterback. I'm putting Carson Wentz in there, and regardless of any rumors, regardless of those other receivers and what they're saying. Because you can believe there's a disgruntled wide receiver on every team.
Sure.
If you put a microphone in every receivers around the NFL, the backups, they would be telling you, and we'd be getting stories a lot like this.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is the NFL about to make major changes following the no call in New Orleans? CeCe says nope. That is next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, a three-time Super Bowl champ, Mark Schlereth joins the show.
Fresh from his week in Los Angeles.
How are we?
Good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
We are great.
Good.
We always missed you. We're glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back.
Got a lot to talk to you about.
I didn't miss you, but glad.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you and I were next.
Yeah, I was with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Two days later, we're still talking about the no call in the Saints-Rams game, the one that inevitably sent the Saints packing and sent the Rams to the Super Bowl. The referees admitted to missing a late pass interference on Nickell Robey-Coleman. Too little, too late, say Saints fans. And as for the players themselves, well, the NFL admission of fault doesn't do much.
It's devastating to us. I mean, you can admit apologize, but we're home. You know, that we get that call, I feel like we got a really good chance to be playing in 2 weeks against the Patriots. So it's too late. It doesn't mean nothing to us to admit it or don't admit it. It's too late.
And, of course, Stink, this is going to now open up Pandora's box for what should and should not be included in instant replay. What do you think about the NFL expanding instant replay to pass interference plays?
Well, I think that's fine. I just hate instant replay. I hate the way they implement it. I hate the fact that they don't change enough calls. I hate the fact that like, the whole mantra is with instant replay is we want to get the game right. Right? Is that correct? But only if you have a challenge flag. Only if your coach reaches down and grabs it out of his sock and throws the challenge flag, or if you have enough timeouts, or if we only want to get it right when we want to get it right, or when you have a challenge flag. Like, that makes no sense to me. Like, wouldn't you want to get it right, I don't know, all the time? Wouldn't that be the goal? So why do we have to go through the histrionics of the challenge flag? Why do we have to have a ref walk to the sideline to look at the Microsoft tablet when they're making the decision in New York? Why do we have to do all that? Just put a lower third down that says, this challenge brought to you by Microsoft. If you're buying it, why do we have to go through all the garbage? Let's have somebody upstairs that looks at every play and goes, oh, yeah, wait a minute. Give me a second. Let me relook at that. Stops the game or whatever. I don't understand why the whole challenge play. Is it for the drama of it? Because I don't care about the drama. I want to get it right.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to recommend something like that when you're in the playoffs and you only have a game or two. But I would doubt that the NFL has the capability of having 8 qualified people in real time. Say, when you're calling games, and sometimes you're in that first window of games, there's 8 games on.
Yeah.
So I need 8 specific people that are going to running the game from New York. I don't think they have the ability to be able to do that.
And now, if we're talking about expanding it to penalties or things that weren't called penalty, you can't just watch the ball. You got to watch the opposite side of the field. Was there illegal contact? Did one of the guys in the trenches hold? I think this is a terrible idea. Just period, point blank. And people can point to the CFL. Oh, the CFL did it. And they expanded replay in the final 3 minutes and on pass interference calls. Okay, people should say that. You know what happened in 2015, right, in the CFL championship game, the Grey Cup, was the game was, I don't necessarily want to say flipped, but on the game-winning touchdown drive of their version of the Super Bowl, coach challenged a non-call pass interference, went his way. We want that. Because it's usually not this blatant. It's usually hand fighting. Mm. It usually could go either way. And I'm watching Chiefs-Patriots, and I've been told the whole time there was replay, it's incontrovertible video evidence. And they are looking if Julian Edelman touched that punt. And it's like, in this angle, it looked like it touched his thumbs. In this angle, it didn't. And nobody knows if that's getting overturned or not. There's not consistency with it. The reason that play ended up not being a controversial one was 2 plays later, Brady threw a pick, so it felt like, it evened out for the Chiefs anyway. But I do not trust the mechanism, and at its core, I don't think these NFL games are just about getting it right. There's a reason that NFL guys make the money they do when they're on television, and the International Lawn Dart Association isn't. People enjoy watching the games. And if these games turn into 4.5-hour review fests because every call must be got right every time, then you are dampening the entertainment quality of what is the entertainment industry. So I wish we could remove all replay. We're not going to do that. Expanding it to non-called penalties is so dangerous to what it would do on any big play of the game.
But even if you coaches still had 3 challenges per, and that's one of your 3 challenges, and if you get it wrong, you get it wrong, I mean, that doesn't take away from the time of the game.
No, we can't forget the entertainment value. The NFL right now, they have it right. And they've been working on it the last several years to get it within that 3 hours, 3 hour and 10 minute time. And it's going to take, if you give them more challenges, it's going to take more time. So I don't believe it can work. Now, I'm just going to tell you, based on being on a couple committees that changed the rule with the catch, no catch, and first they didn't want to change it, then they changed it. Like, I see another committee coming in my future, and I'm open. I'm not totally against. I just haven't seen the right way to build it, instituted in the games where it's not going to stop the flow of the game. And one thing we need to do, too, we need to consider this. Before we change any more rules, how much more difficult are we going to make it for the defensive players?
Yeah. Well,
anybody thinking about that? No, of course not.
Right.
Now, no, because it's already impossible to play defense. We got the numbers going. The numbers tell you that as far as points. We saw that September, October. Man, the only thing that helped us out
was the weather.
Was the weather a little bit. So how many more rules are we going to change that we make this game more lopsided than what it is?
I will tell you the other thing, and you're 100% right on that. The other thing is, how many more rules are we going to change to make it more difficult on the refs? Like, their job is incredibly difficult. And this is one of the reasons I was always – now, I'm not a replay fan. I was always one of those guys that's on the fringe saying, scrap the whole thing, because you can't get it right anyhow. So scrap it and let's just let human error. Because I look at the Saints situation and said, you run the ball twice there, you make them eat up their timeouts, then you run it the third time, then you kick a field goal. Guess what? They have almost
less than a minute, and they're down three with having to drive at least 60 yards.
So, yeah. You know,
Patty Mahomes did that in the evening, so it's not like it's not possible. Exactly.
He had one timeout. But
also, if you catch them in an all-out blitz, which they were in, and you throw the ball and you score a touchdown.
Right.
You and I disagree. But I don't want to score a touchdown with a minute 40 left.
That's okay. Right. You want to risk until it's some real risk. Right. But when you're on the field, players always say, man, we want the coach to be aggressive. We want the coach to be aggressive. When you see the type of numbers, and it lets you know that if Drew Brees can throw me a 5-yard stop and I could potentially end this game, I want that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take the chance to give them the ball and a field goal is going to tie me up. That's not that difficult to do in the NFL.
Well, going back to the refs, though, we asked them to do so many things. And one of the things that instant replay has done to the refs, it's taken away part of the whole situation that they're in is, hey, you know what? Swallow your whistle. Let's let replay decide. Right. And so the guys get less – they're less demonstrative than they used to be.
Yes.
They're less in charge than they used to be.
They know something's not a fumble, and they know the quarterback's arm's going through. They're like, let's not whistle it dead.
Right.
They're getting obvious things wrong. And the other thing that this would do is refs set the tone. Obviously, this is not a good example of it because this was a terrible miscall. But refs set the tone early. We calling it tight or we calling it loose?
Right.
Are we going to call it by the letter or are we going to let you play a little bit?
Right.
And if you then all of a sudden can challenge one play a game. To your point, Jenna, how long would it delay it? Even if it doesn't make the game longer. One of the worst things about, in my opinion, the catch rule the way it used to be was any big catch, if your team made it, you're sitting on pins and needles while they're showing these replays. You're like, oh, God, don't let them show that the ball moved. Don't let them show this little bit because you want it to get to the next play. If you could challenge non-calls, any big touchdown your team scores, you're just terrified. Don't let them throw a challenge flag because there was holding on the guard. Don't let them throw a challenge flag because there might have been a pick play, a yard pass where it can be. And you can't. One of the nice things about baseball is a home run's a home run. Like, there's clarity on it. We know when a guy hits a home run, it's not getting challenged. It's not coming back. And so that's where I agree with you entirely. It's made the referees less certain of what they're seeing with their eyes because they have the crutch of the replay.
Mark, stick around.
Yeah,
we're gonna talk more football on the other side. Coming up, was the discord between Brady and Belichick overstated? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth, we're going viral. Antonio Brown spent Championship Sunday shirtless, working on his craft, catching passes. No, he's wearing a shirt. Is he not wearing a shirt?
He's wearing a shirt. Kyler
Murray. Kyler's not wearing a shirt, and that's who's throwing the ball. From Heisman winner Kyler Murray. AB also tweeted his appreciation for Steeler Nation, saying this is not a goodbye, just a thank you.
See, this you took note of this during the games, talking about whatever criticisms people have of Antonio Brown, how hard he's going to work is not one of them.
No.
What's up, C?
I mean, no, that's not one of the question marks. No, not how hard he wants to work. But as you can see, there's only a quarterback, a DB, and a whole bunch of teammates and everything around him. That's when the questions become, man, that's your fault. Man, forget you. How you talk to me? Yeah, he's a wide receiver. It's a nice look at me. I mean, he put the video out there. Look at me.
Maybe he was trying to show off Kyler, pinpoint accuracy, trying to help his draft stuff.
He should have taken a picture of him and Kyler standing next to each other. Been like, wow, they look like two wide receivers.
Right, about the same.
Yes.
Couple slot receivers.
All right, back here with Mark Schlereth. Time for some stories to start your morning. Klay Thompson went off last night, tied an NBA record by making 10 straight threes. He finished with 44 points as the Warriors rolled the Lakers. Remember that slump Klay was in? Nick, how impressive was Klay Thompson last night?
Well, I mean, we've never seen this before. He ties the record for 10 straight threes, but nobody had ever done his first 10 threes of the game. Made 10 in a row, missed one, and was like, I'll be done shooting for the night, 10 of 11. Nice 44 points in 26 minutes. Just a vintage Klay Thompson performance.
The hard part is the Lakers know he was going to shoot it. Nothing they can do about it. I mean, even when they overplayed the three-pointer, overplayed his right hand, he still was getting it up. Man, that was a classic Klay night last night.
To the NFL now, Drew Brees says he'll be back next season. It'll be his 19th season in the NFL and his 14th with the Saints. Stink, you think Drew Brees has one more playoff run left in him?
Oh, absolutely. He's playing. I mean, come on. He completed almost 75% of his balls this year. I mean, he's an incredible player. He's an incredible leader. He's a great, I mean, just a great human being. So, yeah, absolutely. And he's playing at as high a level as he's ever played at. Your new prime starts for quarterbacks now around 36. You know, right? I mean, it's unbelievable what he and some of these older quarterbacks are doing in the league.
And back-to-back, heartbreaking playoff exits for Drew Brees and the Saints somehow got worse this year than last year.
And he's in great shape. He just doesn't tell you about it. On to the Rams now. Despite him not making a big impact in the NFC Championship game, Sean McVay says Todd Gurley is healthy ahead of the Super Bowl. Stink, you think Gurley bounces back in the Super Bowl?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a phenomenal player. I don't think there's any question that he's been nursing some type of injury. I know he had a knee problem earlier in the year. There's no question that he wasn't himself. In the NFC Championship games, does he bounce back? Absolutely, he bounces back.
Yeah, there's no way C.J. Anderson is going to lead the Rams against the New England Patriots. Now, he might run the ball against some other NFL teams, but he will not be able to run the ball against New England. Todd Gurley's ability to be special in the passing game and in the running game, that's what made the Rams special the last 2 years. If he's not special, I don't see the Rams winning.
All right, back to the Patriots and their incredible run now. How do you define an incredible run? Well, they're heading to their third straight Super Bowl and their fourth in 5 years. In sports terms, that's good. A lot of that has to do with their edge preparing for the game. Tom Brady said they added 8 plays the morning of the AFC title game, and they used 4 or 5 of them in the game, all successful, according to Tom. Stink, how impressive was the Patriots' approach against the Chiefs team?
Well, I think a couple of things that, you know, you just look at the small things, the little things that they do. Just from clock management standpoint, one of the things you want to do as a football team is you want to eliminate Kansas City's possessions because offensively they're so good. You watch them. They huddle every time. They come out in a league where it's completely spread offense. They come out with a tight end, fullback, running back, two tights. Two running backs, with one being a fullback and one wide receiver.
I thought it was 80s, 90s.
Right.
Parcells.
Right. That's exactly what it looked like. And then they huddled every time. They didn't snap the ball until there was less than 10 seconds.
They don't work on the last 4 minutes of the quarter to start working on the clock. If that's your objective when you start the game, well, let's start right now.
Right. First drive of the game, they eat up on close to 8 minutes. I think Kansas City had 3 drives in the first half. They got the ball in the fourth their fourth opportunity and got sacked with about 20 seconds
left. Right, three drives
in the first half. I mean, that's winning football. Then pass rushing. Like, you think little things about how they operated their pass rush, where they ran, like, nose guard
stunts out.
Stunts. Yes, stunts the whole time. Nose guard out, tackle out, loop the end into the middle, force Mahomes out to the edge where they have a guy waiting for him because of the stunt they just ran. So little things like that that they do on a consistent basis, they do it better than anybody else. They have the game plan. And they go, this is how we're going to execute it. Here's why. They do a great job. I think both of these teams, both the Rams and the Patriots, and I've called 3 Rams games, the Rams, every play has a reason. And every player understands the reason. This is why we run this. This is the reason we run it this way. This is what it sets up in play action. This is what, I mean, they go through it, and every guy knows it, and New England executes it that way probably better than anybody else.
And what was, to me, so impressive, to elaborate on your point about clock management and game planning, is the Patriots' consistent ability within a game to be fluid. So the Patriots' plan the whole first half was minimize possessions. It was very clear. Mm-hmm. And they dominated that first half. But thanks to that Brady pick in the end zone, they're only up 7-0. And they get the ball with around 2 minutes left in the first half, and they are clearly content going to halftime up 7-0. They run the ball, let 40 seconds run off a play clock. They run it again on second down. They get stopped. Andy Reid, I'm not criticizing him. I would have done it in that spot, too. I think every coach would. Says, we got him in third and long. We can get the ball back. He calls timeout. The moment he calls timeout, Belichick realizes, all right, now the situation's changed a little bit. We can afford to be a little aggressive. And then all of a sudden flips. For the first time all half, we're going to try to go downfield on you. They steal a touchdown out of it. Philip Dorsett. The second half, they go back to the clock management game plan. Then the Chiefs take the lead. And then it becomes a Tom Brady passing-centric offense. Their ability within a game to change their style to exactly what the situation demands, as opposed to the old cliche of, oh, we're going to establish the run, we're going to be a tough-nosed football team, or we're going to spread them out. Okay, that all makes sense if the situation demands it. The Patriots do whatever individual situations demand, recognizing that could be three or four different things within one football game, as was the case Sunday night.
This is why all season I would ask you, why are they so good even though talent-wise they don't match up with their opponents so well? It's because you keep saying they play such good situational football. They're so prepared. They know exactly what's going to be, what's going to happen, and it starts with Tom Brady at the line being able to read those defenses.
Well, they don't know what's going to happen. They play the percentages as far as probability. What people don't understand is when you look at New England, they're very, very predictable. In this game, they ran the ball 48 times. The Chiefs only have 47 plays. So when you start the game, that was their game plan. Mm-hmm. Now, they wanted to do it a couple different ways. Sony Michel was dominant for three quarters. But we're going to allow Rex Burkhead to be able to knock you out late in the game. So their variance within what they're trying to do, James White, we knew coming into Kansas City was one of the worst defending running backs coming out of the backfield. He only played 12 plays in the first half. He gets six first downs. Mm-hmm. Two times he picks up a blitz. That Philip Dorsett, when they got aggressive, James White picks up a blitz. So utilizing the players, knowing what their strengths are, and having them do the things that they're strong at, that's what is the secret to New England and how they design these game plans. There's no accident the reason why they don't typically have more college graduates on their team. You know the reason why? Because there's going to be some Sunday mornings that I'm going to wake up as a coach and I'm going to try to install some things. Now, there wasn't a team I have ever been on that they could come in the offensive meeting room the morning of the game and put in eight plays and there wouldn't be some type of chaos or confusion, especially in the wide receivers room and or it would be a trickle-down effect, the running backs and the offensive line. Like, so that variance that they have over every other team, oh, man, that's part of the secret sauce that, no, we're going to have a game plan, but we're not stuck to it because we might vary it by one way or another.
I think it's really interesting, and I think this is a societal thing in general, that we like to pick people apart. We like to look at people's weaknesses because it makes us feel better about our own weaknesses to point the finger at somebody else's weaknesses.
Right, and that's immediately what we start to do stink. After college football, we love the pomp and pageantry of college football. Right. All these kids playing for their school, but as soon as they say they're going pro, we immediately say, Kyler Murray. Oh, he's not 5'11".
Right.
You know, then we start poking. Yes.
So the New England Patriots, and I've talked to multiple people within in the scouting community, people that have worked for them, and the whole aspect that sets them apart is, I don't want to know what he can't do. Tell me what he can do. And let's see if we can put him in a position to win. And I think ultimately you can look at any walk of life or any business and say, if you had that as your standard, if you had that as your foundation of don't tell me what this guy can't do. Let me put him in a position to win. Let me put her in a position to win, as opposed to focusing on her or his weaknesses. And that's what they do. Why do you think they use three different backs? Well, this guy's really good. This guy's really
good at this. They get a complete back by using three of them.
Right. This guy's really good at this, and this guy is really good at this, and we're going to put him in these situations to be successful. We're not going to ask, you know, we're not asking Rex Burkhead to do something that's James White's strength. Let's put James White in there.
And it's why I constantly underrate this team. Because I look at I look at the teams, I'm like, man, they don't got no one like Todd Gurley that can do everything, right?
Right.
But James White is the pass catcher, at least not maybe not
he's
down the field,
Gurley.
But horizontally. Right. But James White has an element of his game that he can do as well as Gurley can. They don't have the number one, and I'm sure they'd like to have one, but the number one wide receiver. But they have a guy in Edelman that they know exactly what he can do, and they will only ask him to do that. Philip Dorsett might only be able to run one route effectively. He scored a touchdown on it on the AFC Championship game, running that nine route. So, like, their ability to simply say, okay, you might Cordarrelle Patterson. You might have been disappointing as a first-round draft pick in Minnesota. But there were elements that made you a first-round draft pick that instead of trying to grow your game to the things you're weak at, we are just going to try to put a spotlight on those things, those skills you already
have.
We're
going to maximize the skills you have. And I found it laughable when people said, well, Gronkowski, he's dropped. I mean, he only had one catch. And I'm like, did you watch him on line of scrimmage? Did you watch him dispense justice on defensive ends and linebackers? Did you watch him run across the formation, wham, block a nose, and then run the wham pass where he whams the nose and Edelman runs the over and he's open by 20, you know, gets a 31-yard gain. He's open by 7 yards. I go, did you watch? He had an incredible effect on the game in the divisional round and caught one ball and may have been the biggest difference maker on the offensive side of the ball in that game. But we just want to look at, yeah, but he only had one catch. Yeah, but you know what? He did everything else that gave them that victory in that particular game against the Chargers.
The other element to this team's success is the relationship between their quarterback and their coach, which is an unprecedented relationship. We haven't seen it anywhere else really in sports. It's longevity and then how close they are. How successful is Brady Belichick, that tandem, to the success of this Patriots team?
Well, I think it's huge, and I think we always tend to, I mean, I fought with my offensive line coach about things all the time during the course of my career. Like, that's stupid, I'm not going to do it. And then he would yell at me and I'd yell at him and we'd figure it out eventually. But there's certain things, you know, as a receiver, some coach tells you to do something, you're like, hey, man, on a grease board, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Right? In a game, that don't work. And as long as you can give them the reason it doesn't work, I think most guys are great with that. I called my offensive line coach just the other day, just tell him I loved him. Best coach I ever played for. Man, I just want to tell you I love you.
Yeah,
it just dawned on me.
You're such a good guy.
No, but it just dawned on me. I was like, man, I haven't talked to him in a long time. I haven't talked to him in a while. I'm just going to call him, tell him I love him.
And I think
it was awkward when he called me back, though, because he was like, oh, hey, thanks for the message.
You left it on voicemail?
Yeah, I left it on voicemail. Like, thanks for the message. I like you, too.
But I think that now, as an older person, you appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I think that Tom Brady wasn't a star in college. He was not the high draft pick. He was not the choice for the franchise. So in his greatness being developed, a lot of that had to do with Brady submitting his talent, believing in Belichick. Mm-hmm. Because Brady comes to the game with hellacious confidence that they're going to have a defensive scheme. Now, they might not have all the people to rush the passer, the linebackers that you know about. But in the red zone, they're going to be able to slow people down, and they're able to create turnovers for Brady. So I just believe how his talent has developed. He has a tremendous faith in who Belichick is, and he has appreciation now, not when he's retired like Stink. And I think that that's part of the magic that makes that relationship go.
Well, and the other element is, and we talk about this team and this relationship more than any other in the NFL because they win the most, and so they're usually one of the last two teams. They're always one of the last four teams. So there's more airtime to discuss them. But any long-term success that I can think of in sports has some type of bond between the star player and the coach. Like, there's one-off championships. Like, those happen where it was, I don't know how good the coach was, or I don't know if they had the star player. But whether it's the Spurs in the NBA or the Bulls in the NBA or the Lakers in the NBA, a league that has a bunch of dynasties, or the Patriots in the NFL, really the only dynasty, there's the symbiosis. Like, there is, Jordan needed to run the triangle and needed to submit something to Phil Jackson, right? Just like Kobe and Shaq did. Duncan needed Popovich to have that type of run. Brady, the reason that we can say, oh, Aaron Rodgers, most talented quarterback we've ever seen, he's been to one Super Bowl. He's never had that symbiosis to work with where when he's not at his best, they can still win. And when he is at his best, they are unbeatable. That's what the Pats and Brady have had along with Belichick.
I need you so that I can move forward with
you need Brum
words.
And all the 11 people who work for you, Jenna.
That is
those are the people you need.
Not true. Stink, stick around.
Yes.
Got more to talk about. Coming up, should we expect an offensive explosion in the Super Bowl? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth. So it'll be 17 years to the day since these two same teams, the Rams and the Patriots, met in Super Bowl 36. The game has changed quite a bit in that span, especially this past season, especially on offense. Patriots and Rams were two of the highest scoring teams in the NFL this year. And so Vegas is adjusting accordingly. The over-under is 58 for this game, the highest in Super Bowl history. Stink, what type of game should we expect?
You know, it's going to be interesting because my first experience of getting to know Eric Mangini, who is on the show all the time, was at our former workplace where he cornered me in the hall and we talked for about an hour plus on defending the zone running game. And he was like,
yes. Well, so Stinks, people should know,
right.
People that don't
know, okay.
Stinks teams basically invented and made famous the zone blocking scheme.
The zone blocking scheme. And Belichick and Mangini and the New England Patriots always struggled with Mike Shanahan in that zone running system. Okay, that was their nemesis. And they always struggled trying to defend it. Well, I'm telling you, put on the Rams. The Rams run exactly what the 90s Broncos run. It's identical, except for the fact that they do it out of three wides. They do it out of nickel far more than the Broncos. We were far more base.
Right.
And so they run all that stuff. Now, they have other things that they run as well, but it's based out of that wide zone, wide stretch, 18-19 handoff, 18-19 force, 18-19 pitch, 18-19 toss. It's all based out of that and all the play action that coincides with that, the naked boot keeps, the play passes, and all those things. They do a great job of running that, and that's always been one thing that historically – the Patriots have struggled to defend. So that part to me is a really interesting matchup between the Rams offense and what they run and what this Patriots defense, you know, has struggled with past history. Now, that's a long time ago, obviously.
No.
But it's still one of those things.
And
McVay
came up under Shanahan in Washington before he got this job at 30. And right. So, like, it makes sense that that would be what they're running.
And a lot of times when people talk about the Rams offense, they think they know what the Rams offense is. But ultimately, it's 31 personnel, you know, mm-hmm. and it is running that right. zone. Like, that's what they want to do. As you would say, they want to thunder punch you. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they want to do. They right. do it with a lot of eye candy, camouflage and right. everything, but that's what they want to do. On the defensive side, too, I think a matchup, and it's coaching philosophy, it's scheme, styles make fights. Wade Phillips and his defenses have been very successful going against Bill Belichick and his offenses. So are they able to put together a game plan that Ndamukong Suh, which I would say these last two football games are as good a games that I have seen him play back-to-back, team defense. That means staying in his gap, controlling two people, rushing the passer, playing an elite level, first, second, and third down. Can they protect those linebackers, because they will have a game plan for right. Aaron Donald. The strength of the offensive line, the center, and the two guards. Strength of their defense, right there, those defensive tackles. So I think the style for which they're sure. trying to with Sean McVay offensively, it has had success against Belichick and Wade Phillips. Nick, one of your buddies there, he's had success going against Brady and a Belichick right. coach offense.
Wade Phillips, really interesting, going back to, you know, just kind of his style, is back in his Denver days, You know, people would tell you this about Wade Phillips when you talk to guys around the league. Wade Phillips is going to run what Wade Phillips runs. You're going to be a 90% man. You're going to play man. And you know what? We're going to play cover 11, and we're going to just see how it works out, right? And I'm having dinner with a couple of guys on the coaching staff from the 2015 Denver Broncos team, and they talked about Wade, how he put a game plan together in the AFC Championship game against Brady. Now, Brady came back in the fourth quarter and made it. You know, they were 1-2-point conversion away from tying the thing and all this. But how they never ran the same thing on defense one time. It's like you take everything Wade has ever done and what he has been historically through his career. And in that particular game, it was blitz, then it was coverage, then it was man, then it was then it was zero, then it was, throughout the entirety of the game.
And history would tell you that if you give him people who can rush, and you give him some coverage people.
That's all he's ever wanted. He's ever wanted is give me two corners that if I need to, I can leave him on an island and give me guys that can get home.
Sure.
The other seven guys on defense, he'll figure out. The safeties, the linebacking, like this is when he was in Houston and he's, you know, he'll tell you he stood on the table for J.J. Watt because he when they were going to draft him because he thought, all right, if he can take care of as a 3-4 defensive end my pass rush, much like if Aaron Donald can take care of my pass rush as an interior defensive lineman, the ability it gives him. Another aspect of this game that I do not think should be discounted. We just saw what the Patriots did to Tyreek Hill. Add it to the list of number one options for an opposing offense the Patriots have just eliminated. I think it became most famous when they played the Rams 17 years ago and they said, listen, greatest show on turf, lot you can do. What's not going to happen is Marshall Faulk going to ruin our day. And that started this, or at least started it famously and has kept it going. Todd Gurley, of course, the number one option for the Rams. But their number one A is Brandon Cooks. A player who we just talked about how the Patriots know guys' strengths, know what they can do, know what they can't do. He was with the Pats last year. They have intimate knowledge of what Brandon Cooks is really good at and what you can let Brandon Cooks try to do because he's not great at. Because
I can present the other side of that. Okay. You also got a year of Brandon Cooks running past you in practice. All right, because he's a hell of a is a hell of a talent.
But doesn't
so they also got bad memories of him. It's not like they were just shutting him down.
No. I mean,
there's a reason why he's put together, I think, four straight 1,000-yard seasons.
Absolutely, but I think they would rather have the memories of him running past you in practice rather than just have the film of it, of him running past people, because having him in the building, they know him as a player better than any player they have on the Rams.
So what about the same intel that I have?
As a wide receiver.
What the information that Brandon Cooks has on the...
I just think it's more... Maybe you can tell me...
Why?
I'll explain why. Because you have an entire coaching staff that coached a player. Brandon Cooks, I don't think, when he was playing with the New England Patriots, was trying to accumulate all the information possible on the New England Patriots' defensive backs.
Absolutely, Nick. But that's the number one thing you do when you're practicing against your team. That's who you're going against. I have a game plan for every guy on our roster, what they do, what they can't do, because the only way I can be successful is by defeating them in practice.
I know who bites on double moves. I know who's great press guy.
I know them better than I know the opposition around the league.
Here's the other thing. Like, I look at, you mentioned Tyreek Hill. So we get a double team on him, right? We got some guy pressing him. We got one safety rolling over the top. No shallow crosses? You can't double team a shallow cross.
Yes.
You didn't hand it to him on a jet sweep. You didn't fake a
Couldn't
jet sweep.
Couldn't believe they never handed the ball.
And that's one of the differences.
You didn't fake a jet sweep and throw a screen
between
to him.
Between him and Cooks is those shallow routes and intermediate routes. They get the Cooks more.
And I will tell you, Sean McVay, even if they're double teaming him, he'll find a way to get the ball in his hand. Like, the fact that you didn't put it in his hands and give him a chance to run with the ball afterward, you just said, he's getting double teamed. We've got enough one-on-ones across the board. That part was not coached very well.
I totally agree. And maybe the Rams will learn from that mistake the Chiefs made of not getting the ball in the hands of their most explosive playmaker. I do trust the brain trust of the Patriots and what we've been talking about all year and all morning to know some things Brandon Cooks can't do and to use that against him.
So you're all taking the under. Making sure where we started this conversation.
Oh, well, that's a different discussion for a different day. We'll do bets later in the week, Jenna. Come on, we got nine more days.
Started the segment, but that's neither here nor there. Mark, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks
Absolutely.
So much for everything.
Thank you,
guys. Take a break coming up. Big changes ahead for the Chiefs. That's next on First Things First. All right, we'll get to Gronk
in a second. But first, catch any of these from last night. Oh. Giannis driving to the basket does that to Luka Doncic.
Most dangerous in open court. Giannis, yes.
Shout out Luka, second youngest player ever with a triple-double in the loss. Luka Doncic.
Did you feel good about that, him trying to contest that?
No,
he got dunked on.
I like to just, you took care of the dunk. I add a little color to the game.
Oh, that's your boy Luka.
Celtics
team.
That is my guy, Luka.
Kyrie, nice play. The dime between the legs to Marcus
Smart. Whoa.
Kyrie going out of his way now.
Kyrie's playing great, but mark this down. Marcus Smart making a three. Shout out. That's a rare sighting.
Man, he's going to come after you.
Oh, I know, man.
Sixers,
I do not want those problems.
James Harden leads the break. Joel Embiid hustles back, throws Harden's layup off the backboard. Sixers with a big win last night.
Embiid's creating an enemies list now, man.
Yeah, what, he's 7-1. What do I care if people don't like me? What would I care?
Exactly.
What are you going to do? That's what he told Harden last night. What are you going to do?
You ain't wrong.
And finally, just about the worst you'll see out of Steph Curry. First, there was that. Then he moved back. Here it is for the three, and there was that. Not a great sequence for Steph Curry.
Maybe the only bad sequence for the Warriors all game in this blowout.
Over the Lakers.
Whooped the Lakers by 20 in the third. Won the game by damn near 40. But, yeah, this ain't great from Steph. It happens. What are you going to do?
No, it only happens if you go play basketball in the NBA and you're using shoes you cut grass with. Those Under Armour shoes, them things not good. Look at them. I could have swore when I was a kid those used to be in the checkout line. Called Buddies or Skips or something.
Moving on to the Kansas City Chiefs. After coming up just shy on Sunday due in large part to their defense, the one that gave up 37 points to the Patriots in the AFC title game, the Chiefs are considering changes to their defensive staff. In the team's five losses this season, they gave up an average of 40 points while scoring 36 a game. Nick, what changes do the Chiefs need to make to give Mahomes another shot at a Super Bowl?
Well, they're going to move on from their defensive coordinator, it looks like, and I think they should. Bob Sutton has had a very nice career in this league, and maybe on a different team with more personnel that better fit what he wants to do, he'll be more successful. But all year long, Bob Sutton was trying to round peg, square hole this thing. And he was trying to execute a defense that the Chiefs flatly did not have the personnel to execute. You saw similar problems last year. Once they lost Eric Berry, you remember? They were just like, hey, Daniel Sorensen, go do everything we ask all world safety Eric Berry to do. That was not going to work. So that's the first thing. The second thing they need to do, in addition to retaining Chris Jones, who was extraordinary, and they've got a tough decision to make on Dee Ford as far as franchise tag or not, they need to make the back end and middle back end of their defense, meaning their safeties and linebackers, they have to upgrade those spots. I think they could be okay at corner. Kendall Fuller is a good player, mm-hmm. and the guy who came on strong at the end of the year, Tre'Varius Ward, he has shown me enough. I don't think that is the glaring weakness. But Eric Berry, he's going to have heel surgery. You cannot count on him at this point, as much as it pains me to say. Any contribution you get from him is a bonus. But their linebacker spot and their safety spot wrecked them this year. I think both of those could help their run defense, which was their biggest weakness all year. We talked about it all year, and it was why they lost to the Patriots.
Yeah, I think you did a great job as far as going over the defensive changes. The one thing that I didn't like at the end, I didn't like the predictability of the defense. They lined up in a couple defenses, either when Eric Berry was on Gronk, he was always in press. And when New England, once they found that out, you could hear even Brady afterwards, they put in Gronk on a slant, which they hadn't run all year, hadn't run in a long time, be able to take advantage of that after throwing the fade on him earlier. The other one, the two catches, the Edelman and Hogan, they were all in the same defense. They were in two-man. The Patriots set a pick. They ran a basic route across the middle, which is the best route to run, either breaking in or breaking out around 10 to 15 yards. Those are the best routes to be able to run. So they're predictable. Ability late in those games, besides the lack of personnel, their linebacking core is very, very weak. They have to be able to upgrade that, and they have to be able to do something as far as safety. Eric Berry, how much longer are you going to be able to wait on him? And he's getting another procedure done, so that makes it difficult to make plans with him being in your future with the amount of money that they're paying him.
Is the defensive unit much like the offense? How much of their woes would you attribute to their personnel, and how much was the play calling? Because you talked about a square peg in a round hole. How much of it was just it wasn't a good fit, what they were trying to do?
I don't think there's a coordinator in the league that would have made this defensive personnel a top five defense, right? Just like I don't think there are many coordinators in the league that could have prevented this offense from being a top 10 offense. But what you saw was you had what I consider really sharp offensive coaching from Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid, and that turned an offense that should have been one of the best to the best in the NFL and third best in NFL history. And you had a defense that probably should have been bottom 10 into arguably the worst defense in the league this year. The Chiefs, assuming they can just maintain 90% of their offensive output and they don't have any guys leaving offensively this offseason, no contracts coming up, they don't need a top 10 defense. What they can't have is a defense that is the flashing red light that every time we talk about Kansas City, there's a yeah, but. And the yeah, but is the other team going to hang 30 plus on them? The only thing they had going for them this year was, aside from the pass rush, they were shockingly good at home defensively. That went away, and the Patriots showed you something, man. The NFL's leading team in sacks, if you just make it to where your quarterback is never holding onto the ball more than 2 seconds, it neutralizes their ability to make big plays entirely. The Chiefs made two big plays that counted the whole game. One was a bad Brady throw in the end zone. The other was a mediocre Brady throw that went off Edelman's fingertips. Neither were because he was pressured, because he wasn't pressured the whole darn game.
Yeah, I think that they need to make some changes as far as their offense is concerned, too. Number one is you can't depend on Sammy Watkins. He has shown us the last 4 years he is going to miss a number of games. Now, he's got a high price tag. I would bring in another young receiver with more speed on the field that I would look to potentially move off of Sammy Watkins. I'm not in love with Sammy Watkins. He's not available enough for me given the price tag that you pay for him. Kelce is in the prime of his career. He's the best tight end in the league. He's really gotten better as an end-of-the-line blocker. He doesn't rival Gronk as far as a blocker, but he's a top five blocker, number one tight end. Now, Tyreek Hill, to me, is a lot like Randy Moss. And what we tried to do with Randy Moss, even after his rookie season where he had 17 touchdowns, we tried to develop the rest of the route tree. How can we get you the ball in your hands quicker because your run after the catch is phenomenal. So Tyreek Hill's got to continue to develop the route tree. They also have to develop a short passing tree for him. How can we throw the ball to him quick outside of a screen? So I believe that's very, very important. And for us to sit here and think Patty Mahomes has the NFL game figured out, no, that's not true. We have seen players come out and light up the NFL and then go backwards. So to think that he's not going to grow, to think he has it all figured out, no, that's not the case. They need a four-minute offense where the case they get the lead, they can grind it out. So I don't believe Damian Williams is the answer there at running back. If you want to go with platoon, I believe he can be a piece of that. But I do believe that this offense can improve because when you get the lead, if you're going to be high-flying, you have to be able to get first downs late in the game to be able to keep that defense off the field. I think New England gave them a lesson, a schooling in ball control, because that's what teams will try to do against them as long as they have Patty Mahomes at the helm.
The Chiefs, despite being third highest scoring offense in NFL history, only had one drive all year long that was more than 7 minutes long, one touchdown drive. The Patriots had one of those to start the football game. So that's to C's point about if you get a lead, being able to grind it out. Now, they do not have real flexibility on offense. They're going to give Tyreek Hill a contract extension. Damian Williams, they just gave him an extension after he had two games replacement for Kareem Hunt. And whether we believe in Sammy Watkins' ability to stay healthy or not, the contract they signed him to, first 2 years guaranteed. He will be your number two receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs next year. It is after the 2019 season they could move off him, but that's not going to save him any real money because that's when Patrick Mahomes' contract is up. The offense, they're going to have to find a way with these same pieces, maybe a draft pick, maybe if there's a wide receiver out there they can get cheap that they think they can insert in there, not Kelvin Benjamin.
Right.
But for the most part, the offense is going to be the same. It's the defense that's going to go under some changes.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is the NFL about to make major changes following the new call in New Orleans? That's next on Christmas First. This February, February, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicking off the 2019 NASCAR season. It's February 17th, only on Fox. Time now for us to go viral. 41-year-old Tom Brady is on his way to his ninth Super Bowl, and with questions circulating all season about the quarterback's arm strength and if he still has it, TB12 had a message for his critics after his third consecutive AFC championship.
I'm too old. You're too slow. We got no skill players. We got no defense. We got nothing. I'm real, bro.
Listen, Tom Brady, more than any other season, has really taken issue with people doubting him.
He's created a chip on his shoulder, man. The universally accepted greatest quarterback of all time. Is nobody believes in him?
No one believes in him.
Like the fifth time you've heard something like that.
I'm just going to tell, hey, man, he is the GOAT. But I did see those pictures from the combine. I know what you used to look like, all right?
Well, listen, credit to the Pats. They found a way to get – part of Brady's greatness is at 41 being incredibly wealthy and all that so accomplished to grind as hard as he does, and they found a little something extra in between the Chargers game and the Chiefs game, which was, whether it was real or not, it felt real to them. You saw Edelman selling the T-shirts, Hogan and him talking about it after the game, so –
Something worked, whether it was the chip, the underdog
mentality.
What about
being good at football?
Being good
late
at football,
in the game, throwing
that was
the
my
ball
third
accurate.
One.
Yeah.
Three things. Time for stories to start your morning. Klay Thompson went off last night. Warriors, Lakers. Klay tied an NBA record by making 10 straight three-pointers. He finished with 44 points. Warriors rolled L.A. Remember that slump he was in? Nick, how impressive was Klay last night?
I mean, this is somehow not one of Klay's five most impressive shooting performances we've seen, which just speaks to how when he gets hot, how...
It's a different level.
Klay hot is the best shooter we've ever seen. Now, Klay overall, not the best shooter we've ever seen. That's his teammate. But Klay on fire, it's NBA Jam style. Made 10 in a row to start the game, missed 11. It's like, I don't need to shoot anymore. He was spectacular.
Oh, he made it look so easy. He's got a beautiful shot. Man, with the Lakers even overplaying the three-point line, there was nothing you can do. And right, Jenna, he was in a shooting slump. Until like 2 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
All right, to the NFL now. Drew Brees says he will be back next season. It'll be his 19th season in the NFL and his 14th with the Saints. So you think Brees has just one more playoff run at least left in him?
Absolutely. And the reason why that team that they put around him, they got two running backs, young, very, very effective. Their wide receivers, I still believe they need some help. That's why they signed Dez Bryant. They could have used Dez Bryant or Brandon Marshall, someone opposite of Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas will get a big contract. But, yes, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, I do believe they will be back in contention next season.
And Brees, it was never really on the board that he was going to walk away, not only because at least the first 10, 11 weeks of the year he's playing at an MVP level, but also if you read, like, Drew Brees had some poor investments, unfortunately, and they want to keep paying him $30 million a year. He's going to keep making that money. Now, Brees and the Saints need to figure out why their offense went into such a slump over the last couple months of the season.
They need another wide receiver opposite of Michael Thomas.
All right, on to the Rams now. Despite him not making a big impact in the NFC Championship game, Sean McVay says Todd Gurley is healthy ahead of the Super Bowl. Chris, you think Gurley bounces back in the Super Bowl?
I hope so. I mean, because the Rams are a special team. A lot of that offense is put together because they run that zone scheme. And Todd Gurley, a one-cut back, a big back, who's also he can hit the home run anywhere on the field. That's what makes that offense really special. C.J. Anderson has been a great story, but you're not going to run the ball with him, that little bowling ball running against the New England Patriots. They play run defense, too disciplined. They need Todd Gurley if the Rams are going to host the Lombardi.
And listen, Todd Gurley's the only player on the offense that is a singular player within the league. And by that, I mean Brandon Cooks is a really good receiver. The other receivers like Brandon Cooks, other receivers better than Brandon Cooks. Andrew Whitworth is an excellent left tackle. He might be the best in the league, but he's probably second or third. Todd Gurley, when healthy, is the best all-around running back in the league and the guy that has been the centerpiece, not Jared Goff, of this offense over the last 2 years. They've got to have him effective to have a chance in the Super Bowl.
And finally, after having a bit of a down season, Rob Gronkowski made a number of catches on the final drives of the Patriots' overtime victory against the Chiefs. Afterwards, Gronk talked about how he's just here to help the team.
Basically what the doctor orders, or the coach, what the coach orders, coach slash doctor orders. So whatever it is, I got a block, I got a receive, you know, it's crucial. I mean, the team depends on me in many situations in the run game and in the pass game. And I've been just fighting all year long. So when situations come like this, I'm ready to go, ready to make some plays. So whatever coaches ask me to do, I'm always down to try my best and give it my all.
Gronk. He just looks like a Gronk. Sounds like a Gronk. See, how important is Rob Gronkowski to the Patriots' chances of winning the sixth Super Bowl?
The only reason why Gronkowski is not getting the type of attention as far as his blocking, because people don't know that much about football. They don't realize how important. New England's offensive line, they have been fabulous. But the tone is set by their center and their two guards. They are the heart and soul of that offense. That is why Sony Michel had an outstanding rookie year. But in the playoffs, Rob Gronkowski, you can add him as an extended lineman. And he is the consummate teammate. You need a lot of guys like Gronk to be able to win football games. I said, my number one skill is not as important. My number one skill is whatever you need me to do to be able to win a game. And Rob Gronkowski is outstanding as far as the amount of football he knows. Well, Chris, how do you know he knows this much football? How many times they put him in motion? Do you realize when you're an offensive player and they send you in motion, you go from being one player in the offense to being a different player? So if you line up outside the number, you motion inside the slot. Now you're a slot receiver. You're not a tight end anymore. You're a slot receiver. Now you motion into the backfield. Now you're a fullback. Now you motion to the end of the line. He comes back in motion. He wham blocks a defensive tackle. That means chipping a guy inside out. Now he's an offensive lineman. You have to be almost a brilliant football player to be able to do that. And he's their number one wide receiver. Late in the game, we're going to put you outside to be able to make the decisive plays, not only in the fourth quarter, but in overtime. Man, he is a tremendous football player in his skill sets. Man, that they utilize him because that's what New England does. What is Rob Gronkowski not good at right now? He's not a burner down the field. So you're not going to see him getting in a bunch of foot races. That's why it was stupid to have him at the end of the game with the Dolphins, because that's not something that they have you do. Gronk making a tackle in open space. Typically, they put you in a strength where you're going to utilize the skill that you have, and that's what we've seen with Gronk. He's been amazing in this last month of football.
What, your point that Gronk is a Gronk, like that is how Gronk has presented himself, and I think it's helped make him money off the field, and it's helped enhance his brand for post-career. But it's done him a disservice as far as people recognizing that other than Tom Brady, nobody knows this offense better than Rob Gronkowski. Other than Tom Brady, nobody knows what other guys' jobs are on any given play better than Rob Gronkowski, because to C's point, he has to know in this play what is the tight end supposed to do, slot receiver, potentially someone in the backfield as well, much less a player on the outside, which is one of the biggest plays of the game. He's out on the outside with Eric Berry on him. And where I give Rob Gronkowski so much credit as far as sports character is he wanted more money this offseason. They didn't give him any of it. What they did was they gave him reachable incentives in his contract. He didn't reach any of them.
Not one.
And he didn't let that lessen his want to or his effort blocking at all. There's no incentive he's going to reach because of his blocking, but his blocking is what eliminated the great Chargers pass rush in that divisional round game. Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa, it appeared they didn't show up. Gronk had such an impact on that game. This year, Gronk, the first healthy year of his career that he has not been a red zone threat at all. He's always had at least 8 red zone touchdowns every year he's played at least half the games. This year he had 1. But he was still their most dominant end-of-the-line blocker as they transitioned to a running team. That is effort, and that can't feel good with all the injuries he has, with the back stuff he has, the way he plays football, and he does it every week.
Brady backs up the pass 90 times in the playoffs. Hadn't gotten sacked 1 time.
Nope.
And a lot of that is because Rob Gronkowski. They do not win the game in Kansas City. Forget the run blocking. If they don't have the variable of, man, we can move our best wide receiver from tight end outside. That's what Rob gives the Patriots.
That's what I was going to ask you. It probably also gives Tom Brady such a level of comfort at the end of games, knowing he has such a reliant receiver out there or a guy that's going to come out there and block successfully. All right, moving on. 2 days later, and we're still talking about the no call in the Saints-Rams game. The refs admitted to missing a late pass interference on Nickell Robey-Coleman. According to reports, the NFL is now discussing making pass interference reviewable in the future, while Saints owner Gail Benson says the team will aggressively pursue changes to NFL officiating. Nick, should the NFL expand instant replay to make pass interference reviewable?
Absolutely not. Because what they're talking about here is making penalties that were not called reviewable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Enjoy every big touchdown, the most exciting plays in NFL games, big touchdowns late, for that to be an auto challenge. Auto challenge and hope they find something and hope by the time they come
right.
over.
All scoring plays are reviewable now, but now you're saying that they're going to
I'm be saying the coach. For, right, I'm saying a coach will, because what they're reviewing scoring plays is, did he score?
Yes.
Was there a turnover? Did he have possession? I'm saying if I'm a coach and you're going to let me challenge things that are not called, I'm going to be watching all game. Oh, okay, this ref, this official's allowing some hand fighting past 5 yards. Let me put that in the old mental Rolodex, and let me see if I can, if I have a good, big play go against me, I'm a challenge. Oh, it was on the other side of the field. There was illegal contact past 5 yards. Take the interception off the board. Oh, okay, I'm watching. You know what? The left guard for the New England Patriots getting hands to the face a little bit. Oh, they scored a big touchdown? Challenge. This is, people say we want it challengeable because in real time, we're like, that is an egregious, awful call.
And what Nick is basing this on is the age-old saying in the NFL, a flag can be thrown every play.
Yes. It's, if a cop follows you long enough, he's going to find a reason to pull you over if he wants to. If you have a guy whose job...
Percentages go up if you're on this side of the table compared to that one.
That is correct. But the point is that they can... If you have a guy whose job, and a smart team would, to look for any infraction on every play, then any big play you will challenge if it's big enough. And so there is no... And by the way, Saints... Like, okay, you want obvious non-calls called or obvious calls reversed? That game maybe isn't in New Orleans. That win against the Steelers in Week 16 that secured you home field advantage. I know Chris thought it was pass interference. The referees on television on the Joe Hayden play against the Steelers, they sure seemed not to. I didn't. I wonder if the referees would have said, oh, you know what? That wasn't no pass interference. Sorry, New Orleans, you don't win that game. Like, it can be awful in real time when it's this bad. There is the human element. There is no thing that will definitively make it better.
We're having this conversation because it was such a blatant pass interference. And maybe if it isn't, you're right. That does happen. But realistically speaking, as someone who's sort of gone through this process of getting something changed, is this something that the NFL is going to take a serious look on, form a committee, sit down, spend weeks trying to change?
Oh, no, they're going to take a serious look at it because it altered the course of a game. And they like to think that they're trying to get it, not necessarily correct all the time, but they'd like them to be right more often than they're going to be wrong. So, yes, when you have someone as powerful as Sean Payton, his relationship with the NFL, you have the owner that's already written a letter, that's powerful in itself that, yes, they can't just disregard it. But as far as changing the rule, I don't think they're going to be able to change the rule because one thing about the NFL product, they like it right now. And the time for which the product is played in has a lot to do with the product's likability. And there is a window, and it's around about 2 hours and 55 minutes to 3 hours and 10 minutes. And they like an NFL game to be finished before that. And instant replay, and I don't believe they're going to make the game better. Now, I wasn't for the catch, no catch. I wasn't for changing it. But I was won over a period of time because I've seen how it can make the game better. If they can show me over time, which they can't do right now, it would make the game better, then I would be for it. Right now, I'm against it.
And one of the reasons I wanted the catch rule changed is, as a fan watching a game, there was nothing more frustrating than thinking your guy made a great catch and then waiting for all the different angles like, oh, no, the ball moved. I know how this is going to go. Take that to every big touchdown. Every big touchdown, the pause of, wait, do I get to celebrate it as a fan, or am I waiting to see if they challenge a call that didn't happen? People can say, oh, they did this in the CFL. It works great. Well, does it? Because the 2015 Grey Cup, which is they instituted this, I think, in 2013, their version of the Super Bowl on the game-winning touchdown drive, challenged a pass interference that wasn't called. They switch it to pass interference. They score the game-winning touchdown. Is that how we want these games to go? That there's hand fighting, because it's usually not that obvious. It's hand fighting down the field. Oh, maybe he grabbed him. Maybe he touched him past 5 yards. And now all of a sudden, those are going to be calls. We're going to bring the refs into it more. I don't like that idea.
So patience is your biggest issue. You want to celebrate as soon as it happens.
I just want that. I don't need more replay in sports. That's what I don't need.
Coming up, was the discord between Brady and Belichick overstated? That's ahead on First Things First. Here on First Things First, former All-Pro running back Ryan Westbrook joins the
Brooklyn,
show.
I'm checking out some Brooklyn.
There you
what
go.
Up?
What's
good
happening?
To see you. Made the trek all the way from Burrow across the water.
Where he lives permanently. That's where his house is. That's where we now know he
little
lives.
Little inside joke.
Used to live in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have
here
you.
Here he played for the Eagles.
Yeah, that's the word on the street. A report came out yesterday, Brian, calling Philly's franchise quarterback Carson Wentz selfish and egotistical. Went on to say Carson Wentz's biggest enemy is Carson Wentz. This was from a couple of anonymous players interviewed on the Eagles team. Let's just say it made some non-anonymous players on the Eagles team a little upset. Lane Johnson came to the quarterback's defense, tweeting, "Whoever wrote that article needs to check their sources. Hashtag fake news. Carson has been and is our leader and our quarterback. Y'all know where to find me if you have any issues. Hashtag fly Eagles fly." And Fletcher Cox chimed in, reading through this Carson Wentz thing, and as a leader on this team, none of that is true. Carson is a great teammate and great player. We are all behind him 100%. He's our guy, and we'll come back and prove the world wrong. If you got a problem, feel free to at me. I will respond. All right, Brian, what is your reaction to what's going on with your former team in Philly?
Yeah, I mean, when you think about some of the best leaders, some of the best players in our league, you're talking about they have egos. Sometimes they push back against some of the things that the coaches are trying to get them to do.
And I thought that was one of my old coaches with a scouting report.
Yeah, that sounds like some of the best players that have ever played. You know, I think there's a lot of guys in the league that you can say these exact same things about. I think in this situation, it's weird because Nick Foles, not Carson Wentz, is a guy that led him to the Super Bowl. Nick Foles is totally different. He's a guy also that went into this team this year that wasn't in a playoff berth type of area and allowed them to win 6 out of the last 8 games and then make the playoffs and do a very good job in the playoffs, beating the Bears on the road in the first round. So it's a little bit different. I also think, you know, the one thing that bothered me about the story, the totally one thing, was that a veteran player went to him and that veteran player say he felt like Carson pushed him away. The veteran player was going to Carson to say, hey, maybe you should do things a little bit differently. Maybe you should look at it a different way. And the veteran player seemed like he was pushed away from Carson. Other than that, all these other things, all these other traits, these are some of the traits of the best players in our league. I don't have a problem with some of those other things.
Well, the thing that was more concerning to me than egotistical or selfish, like the character shots, because I think, listen, different people can think different things about somebody. It doesn't seem like that is the universal knock on Carson. In fact, the near universal opinion seems to be quite different. The thing that concerned me was that it was believed that once Frank Reich and John DeFilippo left the building and there was a bit of a leadership vacuum, that Carson Wentz seized upon that vacuum to what was described as almost bullying the new offensive coordinator Mike Groen to doing things his way. And the reason that could be problematic for the Philadelphia Eagles is, as I learned sitting across from Chris Carter the last 2 years, is no matter how great you are as a young player, there is so much football you don't know. That no matter how talented you are.
Player or broadcaster, same thing.
Okay, appreciate that. Yes. But whatever it is, there's elements of the game that even if you are the most talented person in the room, that the most experienced person in the room can teach you. And if what we saw on the field then also went along with the fact that it looked like the Eagles ran one type of offense this year with Carson, and it was a Zach Ertz-centric offense, which I think is probably the source of some of the anonymous frustration, and then it became an equal opportunity offense the moment Nick Foles came in. So there are parts of this to go along with something Josina Anderson reported a couple months ago that I do find believable, that there's frustration in the locker room by some members, most notably of the receiving core. Zach Ertz, really good player. Yeah. Is he good enough to be the most targeted tight end in the history of pro football? Like, is that too much? Or is when Carson out there, is it swaying too much to him and not enough the rest of us? And then the leadership part, that was concerning to me as well.
Yeah, this is where I am. And I know it's impossible for two quarterbacks. If you were playing a game and we could virtually put Nick Foles with the Eagles and put Carson on the Eagles, they call the same plays. Brian will tell you, or validate my comments, that the ball will go different places based on how he feels the game. Every player, especially quarterbacks, see the game different. That's why at the end of the week, the coordinator, the quarterback coach, come to the quarterback and ask him, what are you comfortable with? Because we're going to major in the things that he's comfortable with. Carson Wentz is totally comfortable with things that Nick Foles, he's different. He has a different set of things that he's comfortable with. And why is that? Nick Foles has been a starter. He's also been benched. He's also had success. He's also had tremendous failure. Carson Wentz hasn't had that. He's had success, all right? And he's been injured. So how he views the game is totally different. Where he is from a mental makeup in his life is totally different than Nick Foles. Nick Foles, after almost quitting, I would say right now he's a better leader and support leader than at any other point in his career. And that's based on his success and also his failure. So I'm not going to bang on Carson Wentz because I can understand how, especially wide receivers, would draw the conclusion that, oh, man, this guy is doing this because he's throwing to the tight end more. I have had other wide receivers or other players on the offense say things about the quarterback and his relationship with me, but it was based on the play caller. And most of those plays were designed to go to me.
Well, it's based on production as well. If they throw the ball to Chris Carter, guess what? He makes plays. He catches the football. Same type of thing for Zach Ertz. I think you had a great point, though, Nick. The offense ran much smoother, much more fluently with Nick Foles, who's spreading the ball around. That's something that Carson has to take from the veterans and say, hey, maybe things are better that way. Maybe I shouldn't target Zach Ertz so much. And I think it's been a little bit overblown as far as the amount of targets Zach Ertz gets between Carson playing quarterback and Nick Foles.
Is that for a veteran to walk up and say that to him, or is that for someone like Doug Peterson to sit him down and say, let's try to get through all your reads and go through your different
To me, either one. I mean, you should respect the veterans. When I was a veteran on the team, I went to Donovan
McNabb. Learn as much from the players as you did the coaches when you were playing? Because I think that that's an aspect that fans don't understand.
I love when guys in my same room, when LeSean McCoy as a rookie came to me and said, Wes, maybe you should look at things this way. Maybe you should try on the outside zone, forcing it outside and then cut up. Mm-hmm. Different types of things. I respected that. He studied the game. He plays the game. There are a lot of coaches, you understand, there's a lot of coaches that never actually played the game. They know how to coach and they're great at coaching, but they can't speak the same type of thing that a player can.
Sure.
And that's a little bit different. And so if I'm Carson Wentz, I'm taking everything in that veteran players give me. Everything. And I may not do it exactly the way that they want to do it, but if they're giving me advice, they're doing it because they want this team to be successful as well as Carson Wentz.
There were a number of things that changed my career, but I had a personal conversation with two players, and it was more significant besides the off-the-field stuff. One had to do with Herschel Walker. He told me that I was not training hard enough to be one of the elite athletes in the world. And then the other one was Roger Craig. And he gave me Jerry Rice's regimen of what he went through and told me I will never be good enough because I don't work at it hard enough and I don't have a routine to be great at being a wide receiver. Those things changed my perspective coming from veteran players.
And Chris, doesn't it also say something as far as the players who we saw vocally immediately have Carson Wentz's back? Yes, it was Zach Ertz, but it was also Stefan Wisniewski, offensive lineman, Lane Johnson, offensive lineman, Fletcher Cox, D-tackle. And the reason those guys maybe aren't as involved in the politics of an equal opportunity, who's catching the ball in the locker room.
No, they have no clue where the ball is supposed to be going. All they know when the play is called is the snap count and the protection. So they have an honest opinion of what they think about the person and the dynamics in the room. But as far as, man, can we do other things when we have other quarterbacks in? That's a reality.
Yeah. They know one big thing. When Carson Wentz was healthy in 2017, 33 touchdowns. If he can return to healthy Carson Wentz, it's a different type of player underneath center.
All right, Brian, stick around. Coming up, did the Patriots win the AFC Championship before even leaving their hotel on Sunday? That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a welterweight title fight as undefeated Keith Thurman defends his belt against Josecito Lopez live from Barclays Center Saturday at 8 Eastern.
You know where that is?
Barclays? Yeah. In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
You know who else lives in Brooklyn?
Right.
Brian Westbrook. Only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Back here with the former Eagle. Used to live in Brooklyn. Still does. We're going viral. Jared Goff and the Rams are going back to the Super Bowl for the first time since the 2001 season. So what's the question on everyone's mind? What will they be wearing? You no longer have to wonder. With Andrew Whitworth leaking the throwback jerseys they'll wear for Super Bowl 53. Do we like them?
Yeah, they should. Listen, the insanity of winning a Super Bowl in those jerseys and then the next year changing the uniform, that never made any sense. Houston Rockets did a similar thing once upon a time. Mm-hmm. They actually ended up winning back-to-back despite it. That's bad
Wait,
karma.
What's the issue you have?
They won the Super Bowl right. in 99 and then the next year unveiled a new uniform.
Well, they're...
That's because they want it's
money.
Time to go sell some more.
Yep, they're making
jersey.
Money.
That's
Hold on. We got Brian Westbrook throwback. Oh,
look.
That's a good looking jersey right there.
There it is. That was a good game for me,
look
by the way.
Look at that.
You knew.
I love that game.
Do you know what you did in that game?
It was a good one. I don't know the exact
Three
stats.
Three touchdowns against the Detroit Lions.
That's right. That's what it's
I feel like
to be
a lot
like.
Of people had great games against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I'm not really into the throwbacks, though.
Really?
I'm not. Don't like the color schemes and everything. Nah. I'm old-fashioned. That's what you tell me.
Right, but that's the... I love you, Chris. I'm old-fashioned. Therefore, I don't like the old jerseys.
No, those are old.
Old. Oh, okay, yeah. Those are too retro for you.
Yes.
I got you. No
Back
problem.
To the New England Patriots.
I thought you were supposed to be here because you're smart.
And their
I
incredible
am, but you're
run.
You're unexpectable, my man.
How do you define an incredible run? Well, the Pats are heading to their third straight Super Bowl and their fourth in 5 years, as we like to say in sports. That is so good. A lot of that has to do with their edge preparing for the game. Tom Brady said they added 8 plays the morning of the AFC title game, and they used 4 or 5 of them in the game, all successfully, according to Tom. Brian, how impressive was the Pats' approach versus the Chiefs? Just that alone, yeah. Them doing that on the morning of the game and having that whole offense implementing those plays yeah. is impressive.
I remember playing in Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You're putting in plays, you're practicing, you're running them so that you don't have to make those types of play changes the day of the game. So you
might make a couple adjustments
maybe
at
some
the
adjustments.
Hotel.
Maybe.
But, man, once the Friday hits,
no,
like
not.
We're locked in.
You're
now,
locked
we might
in.
Throw some stuff out. Like we call it, leave it on the floor.
Right. But, you're not going to run those plays. But, I mean, it's hard to add 8 plays and say, hey, we're going to run these plays, so you have to know them. But that also kind of tells you about Bill Belichick. He wants smart, disciplined players that are not going to make a lot of mistakes. In critical games, critical situations, like the AFC Championship games, you can add those 8 plays if you have those types of players and be successful with them. You saw that the proof is in the pudding. Bill Belichick continues to win. Tom Brady continues to win a team, lead a team. And this football team is smart, disciplined, and they don't make a lot of mistakes.
This is mixing metaphors a bit. But one of the reasons a lot of teams are hesitant to run trick plays is all of a sudden, what do we see on trick plays a lot? Oh, there's an illegal guy downfield. Mm-hmm. Or, they didn't get lined up right. This is one of the things that hurt the Saints when they tried to run these Taysom Hill plays, especially early in the year. A lot of illegal formations, even on successful throws. We saw that actually in their playoff game against the Eagles. They had a successful Taysom Hill play, but they weren't lined up right. The more variance you add, the more opportunities someone can screw something up. They're not on the line of scrimmage right. They don't stay. We've seen on the Pats, I'm almost certain it was the Patriots earlier in the year, where they had their guys just waiting on the double throw. Because remember, on the far side of the field, I can't remember the exact game, you had 3 linemen just waiting to release because if they release a second too soon, it's illegal man downfield. You have to have so much faith in the mental acuity of your players to be able to add something, I would imagine, day of, and then run it. And not add one, guys, there's one play we want to add. You add 8 plays. Yeah.
You run 5 of them.
And you run 5. I think this is, you obviously will know better than me. I don't want to say it's unprecedented, but I have to think it's incredibly rare to add that much the day of the game.
It is very rare. It is very difficult. It's not unprecedented because teams will make an adjustment. Brian mentioned the type of players that they do want. And a lot of times, how can you do something like that? It's because you're not changing the protection. So the biggest offensive unit, the offensive line, which is there's 5 of them, you keep them the same or you have a protection that they're very familiar with. And you show the other guys, that being Gronk and other, you either show them video or you show them some type of clips of other teams doing it and or you doing it. Mm-hmm. So that's how you're able to do it. But one of the things that coaches and I tell people all the time, it's not how much football I know. It's how much football can I communicate and I teach. Belichick is not how much he knows. It's how much can he teach. And in learning it, can I play fast? Because that's what the eight plays did not do. It did not slow up the Patriots. It did not make them think, because that's what bringing in new information. That's why when you go to training camp, the practices are totally different. You can't practice at the same pace because you can't play fast without knowing the information. So the coaches were very, very comfortable that the team could still play fast, even adding this new information the morning of the game, Brian.
The thing that makes Bill Belichick the most comfortable is that you have a veteran quarterback that has played in this game a bunch of times compared to a rookie quarterback, a younger quarterback that hasn't played as much. You have Tom Brady underneath center. It's a different story. You can add as many plays as you want because you know you have that guy pulling the trigger. He's going to make the play right no matter what. When you have Tom Brady, and listen, Patrick Mahomes is a special talent in this league. Andy Reid wasn't adding eight plays the morning of an AFC championship game for a reason. There's a reason behind that. Tom Brady makes everything much better when you have him under center.
Why are you adding plays on Sunday morning if everything is set on Friday? Hey, you've watched all the film.
This is what I think. This is what I think happened. A lot of times you look at the injury report. A lot of times you might get to that city and you might get information based on that city. What I think happened was Eric Berry practiced 2 days in a row. They thought Eric Berry might be put more in the box on the running scheme. Let's go over a couple runs. If he's man-to-man on Gronk outside, let's put in a couple pass plays that we can adapt to, because I know one of the pass plays they went to was the slant after they had called the takeoff or the go route down the sideline that he caught in the fourth quarter, the slant that he caught in overtime. I know that was one of the new plays, so that's not hard to do. That's a very, very small adjustment because Gronk plays outside the numbers every game.
Yeah, these aren't always new plays to the team. These may just be plays that weren't initially in the game
plan. Yes, let's not misunderstand that. These aren't eight new plays drawn up from nothing. Okay. This was just eight things added that weren't currently on a sheet, but they had seen them before.
And the other reason I would imagine that this could happen as late as the day of the game is, what have we heard from Coach Mangini, who's worked with Bill Belichick, worked in that building, is that they are equal opportunity as far as if you have a good idea, no matter what your title is, you will be listened to. So you've got however many people are on this Patriot coaching staff all week long pouring over all the video available to them. So there might have been a moment where Friday evening, they're like, oh my, I've now seen this on three separate instances. The Kansas City Chiefs play this specific play this way. I know we can exploit it. They bring it to one of the coaches. They say, you know what? It's a really good point. We didn't have it in the game plan yet. Let's see if we can get it in there.
And players, the redundancy getting beyond that in a big game, because you will, it's just like reading a book. You'll read a chapter, and you read it two or three times. I swear that third time, you'll pick up something different. You'll pick up a tip. You'll pick up a key. You'll pick up something. And Josh McDaniel felt like in that morning, and that's why I always say that the Belichick factor is more important than Brady. Tom Brady was getting his beauty sleep, all right? He was thinking about what he was going to eat. But the machine continues to turn to get him information that he can be successful. Yes, because Tom Brady was not brilliant before midway through that fourth quarter. Now, we know midway through that fourth quarter and into overtime, he was brilliant, but he's got tremendous – he's been assisted like no other player I've seen in NFL history as far as information, preparation, and that is the, that, to me, is the Patriot way.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.